Welcome to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, and I've got a great show lined up for you today. First hour, Jacob Hornberger from the Future Freedom Foundation. In the second hour, we'll be talking with Scott Kohlhaas. He's the chairman of the Libertarian Party of Alaska. We'll be talking with him about conscription. Before the interview begins, let me first say that my website is weekendinterviewshow.com. If you'd like to hear any of the archives of my previous interviews, feel free to download all you like there in MP3 format at weekendinterviewshow.com. If anybody wants to send me any email, pro or con, it's scott@weekendinterviewshow.com or scott@antiwar.com, where I recently started writing. And also I want to say ha-ha to all the stupid bigots who prematurely concluded that I lost my show. You should know that before I ever got a show on here, John Stadtmiller knew that I'm a libertarian. He knows I'm for open borders. He knows I love Mexicans and Jews. And he knows that I don't believe a missile hit the Pentagon or any of that silly crap. And he gave me a show anyway. And he told me to tell you that he stands behind me and I can say whatever the hell I want. So you can just go sit in a dark room in your little trailer and hate Jews all by yourself and wish that you had a radio show like me. The part Jew with the radio show. Don't you love it? All right. I know you're jealous. Also, I want to say real quick, I saw the trailer for Star Wars 3 the other night, and wow, it looks really cool. So if anybody out there in the audience works at a movie theater and you feel like hooking me up with some tickets for Star Wars 3 toward the end of May, let me know, scott@antiwar.com. I will show up because I want to see that movie right at midnight on May 19th. It looks so good. And, you know, it's the story of how do you turn a republic into an empire? Deception, right? Okay, it's easy. All right, now let's go ahead and welcome to the show, once again, Bumper Hornberger. He's the founder of the Future of Freedom Foundation, which means he hosts such great writers as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Scott McPherson, and others. You can look them all up at fff.org. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Hornberger.
Hey, thanks so much. Nice to be back, Scott.
Well, it's great to have you back on the show, sir.
Thank you.
And, you know, we have all kinds of stuff to cover here today, but I think we need to start with the subject of our last interview again, which is immigration. And, you know, I even meet people who are Mexican who say, well, we got to stop the illegal immigrants before they destroy everything. And I guess there's a few different reasons that people bring up, practical reasons, why immigration needs to be halted by the national government of this country. And I figured who better to toss this topic around with than Jacob Hornberger, the most radical minarchist in the United States.
Well, I don't consider it radical. I just consider it right.
And what's that? What's right?
Well, freedom's right. That people should have the freedom to live their lives the way they want. I mean, that term's been so distorted and so perverted, but really, basically, what it really means, a genuine sense of freedom, is the right to do whatever you want in your life as long as your conduct is peaceful. And that includes traveling from California to New York without hitting some kind of customs station along the way or a Border Patrol agent or somebody just checking your papers. And the same applies internationally. People should be free to just travel all over the world without passports, without travel restrictions, trading, visiting, whatever. Because that's what America was once all about. And the abandonment of those ideas was the great tragic turning point in the history of our country.
My friend and your writer, Anthony Gregory, says that the only legitimate purpose of a border is to keep other governments out, not people.
That's right. It's really just an artificial line that establishes jurisdiction for a particular political unit. I mean, that's why there's borders around cities, around counties, around states.
All right, hold it right there, Jacob. We're going out to break. It's the Weekend Interview Show. We'll be right back with Bumper Hornberger from the Future of Freedom Foundation. It's the Weekend Interview Show.
more friends, but that's exactly where I want to be. When it's the same, I don't want to change for nobody.
Nobody.
Live a life the way I want, just set me free.
Set me free.
That's right, my life, and I live it for no one but me. So you better take a case for your friend, dog, and I'm me.
All right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Jacob Hornberger from the Future Freedom Foundation. And we're talking about the legitimate purpose of borders, if there is one. Jacob, you there?
Yep, I'm there.
Oh, there you go. Okay, so I was quoting Anthony Gregory as saying that the legitimate purpose of the border, the southern border of Texas, for example, would be to keep out the government of Mexico, but not people from Mexico. You concur with that?
Well, partly, it's also just simply to establish the legal jurisdiction of a particular political unit. It's not necessarily trying to keep out another government. It's simply saying, this is the political jurisdiction of this particular political unit. I guess an example is two states, that Maryland and Virginia. The purpose of the Maryland border is not to keep out the government of Virginia. It's simply to establish the jurisdiction over which the Maryland government has its power. Same thing with the Virginia government.
Okay, well, what about people who say that, I mean, because honestly, there are some serious problems that can take place in the real world as the result of massive immigration. And I know you've said before, in fact, on this show that, hey, the only reason that illegal immigrants are criminals is because somebody passed a dumb law making their immigration illegal. But that doesn't make them criminals. But it does sort of leave open things like, you know, publicly funded health care and government schools and things going really bankrupt because of influx of massive amounts of new people coming and bankrupting the infrastructure that was set up by the people who already paid for it.
Well, keep in mind that the only people that complain are the ones that are running these socialist government enterprises. Sheldon Richman, my associate, put it best when he said that government's the only institution that complains about too many customers. I mean, think about it. You've got public schools. They're talking about overcrowding or welfare, too many people receiving welfare. Do you ever see Walmart or Microsoft complaining about too many customers? Like, oh, gosh, something has to be done. There's too many people coming into our stores. So really the ultimate solution is we need to just privatize these socialist institutions. So then the private sector will say, thank goodness we've got these immigrants coming in and buying our goods and services.
So it's sort of our fault for having a socialist country. It's not their fault for being an immigrant.
Of course. And I have absolutely no problems with saying that immigrants are not going to get welfare and they're not going to get public schooling, because I don't think these things are benefits. But by the same token, I think it's only fair to exempt them from the taxation that fund these things, too. I don't think that it's fair to take their money and then say, well, but you don't get take advantage of these things.
But they're taking our jobs.
I was going to add, though, I wish they'd give the rest of us that option, too. So where we could opt out of some of these things like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and let us keep our tax monies.
Well,
and that issue of taking jobs is you know, as you well know, nonsensical. I mean, it may apply to a particular sector. But what it generally does is it frees up people in that sector that are losing their jobs to go out and get better jobs, providing the goods and services that the immigrants are now demanding in the marketplace. The immigrants are out there, you know, buying used cars or buying used clothing or buying or renting a house or whatever, demanding new construction. That opens up a whole new ballgame for jobs for people that have the skills to provide those things. And that's why immigration has always been a great economic boon to a society. It's not a detriment. It's the exact opposite. It's a tremendous boon. That's one of the reasons why America was able to become one of the wealthiest countries in the world in the 19th century, in the early 20th century, because of immigrants and open borders.
Yeah, but what do you know about any of this? Aren't you some Yankee from the Northeast somewhere?
Well, actually, I've had personal experience with it. I grew up on the Texas-Mexican border down in Laredo, Texas. The farm I grew up on was actually on the Rio Grande. We hired illegal aliens on my farm. I helped hide with them when I was a kid, when the Border Patrol would come under our farm looking for them. They're the finest people I've ever met in my life, or among the finest. I mean, the hardest working people. They were religious. They were really, really friends with us. It's just amazing to me that immigrants will even keep coming, because they're abused, they're insulted, and yet they keep coming. They're an amazing people. I think they're kind of like God's gift to a society.
You know, it's funny. There's a lot of fear, I think, on the American right that the Mexicans are trying to take back the Southwest. They're going to, you know, through their radical Marxist front groups, they're going to basically reconquer everything from Utah all the way through the Mexican border and take it all back, and that they must be stopped.
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot of fear among Americans. There's fear of terrorism, and fear of that foreigners are taking their jobs away from them, and fear that American businesses are going overseas. I mean, it's amazing. We've got the most powerful government in history and probably the most terrified people in the world. But look, just because people come over here to visit and tour and open up businesses doesn't mean that there's going to be a new war by which Mexico tries to steal back what was stolen from them in the first place. I mean, you know, everyone knows that in a war between Mexico and the United States, who's going to win a war? So that's nonsensical. It's as logical to believe that because, you know, lots of Americans are moving to Mexico to retire because of the lower cost of living, that somehow or another that's a scheme that the United States has to take over the other half of Mexico that they didn't take over in the Mexican War. These are groundless fears. That there's sort of that paranoia and irrationality that I think pervades people's minds sometimes.
You know, my friend Mike in Tokyo Rogers once wrote something where he said, listen, all you people complain about illegal immigration all day, get rid of the minimum wage. Because somewhere there's a store owner, say, for example, a guy owns a restaurant and needs his dishes washed, but the time and labor doesn't really pay more than $5 an hour. So the only person who he can hire to do that job is someone who's in the country illegally that can't go and get justice if he pays them less than the minimum wage. So we have, you know, from the point of view of a poor Mexican laborer, they have an entire segment of jobs in the United States that only they can take, and they know it.
That is an excellent point. And these do-gooders that say, oh, this is horrible, this is exploitation, that's absolutely nonsense. Because, when, as you know, Scott, whenever two people enter into an exchange, both sides benefit from their own perception. Otherwise, they wouldn't enter into the exchange. And jobs like this, while they appear very, very difficult, are obviously better than the situation back in the home country. And they provide immigrants a first step up the rung of the ladder. If you take away those first 10 rungs on the ladder, you can't reach that 11th rung. But if you got the first 10 there, you're letting people starting to climb up it. And you're absolutely right. The minimum wage is an attack on these people. It's an attack on poor people in general.
Okay, well, let's say you got your magic wish and all the federal immigration laws were repealed and any individual who wanted to come and live and work in the United States was welcome to come on in. What about border security? What about Al-Qaeda dressed up as Jose Sanchez, pretending to be an immigrant when actually he's a terrorist?
Well, first of all, let's keep in mind the roots of the terrorism. I mean, because we can prune the branches all day long. It's not going to do any good unless you pull the root out by its, the weed out by its root. And that is U.S. foreign policy. I mean, this stuff about they hate us for our freedom and values is such nonsense. I think most Americans are starting to figure that out. It's U.S. foreign policy. What's doing to people overseas, including invading countries, killing hundreds of thousands of innocent people. Once we put a stop to that empire thing, then we won't have this terrorism anymore. But even given this foreign policy and the fact that it continues to produce so much anger and hatred against America, the answer still is open the borders. I mean, you know, terrorists can cross from California to New York, and we don't have border patrol stations or custom stations or any of that junk. Even when the terrorists were striking here in D.C. With, you know, D.C. snipers, Malvo and the other guy, they didn't need border patrols guarding the borders of D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. actually, what they did was they had, you know, good old-fashioned police work where you focus all your resources on the people that are, you know, purportedly committing a crime or about to commit a crime. Rather than spy on millions of people across the border trying to monitor all their activities and defusing your law enforcement resources, better to not spy on those people. Don't worry about the free movements of people, but then concentrate on the lawbreakers. Concentrate everything on the lawbreakers. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to always stop crimes any more than they, like, stop this assassination of this judge and so forth. But that's the way law enforcement works most efficiently, when it concentrates resources on catching those that are committing crimes, not spying on either all of America and Americans or even the millions of people that are crossing the borders.
You know, a few weeks ago, I interviewed Brian Doherty from Reason Magazine, and it was about H.R. 418, the Real ID Act, that basically upgrades all the state driver's licenses to fit new federal mandates, basically a de facto national ID card. And he said that a big part of this push was immigration, that all these people who say, government do something about these immigrants, the government turns around to us and says, oh, okay, here's your national ID card, hope you like it.
That doesn't surprise me in the least.
Hey, everybody, it's a weekend interview show on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm Scott Hort. I'm talking with Jacob Hornberger from the Future of Freedom Foundation. Stay tuned. 'm talking with Jacob Hornberger from the Future of Freedom Foundation, and man, this guy's crazy. He thinks that all human beings are born free, even if they're born in Mexico. Is that right, Jacob? You think that?
Well, that's what Jefferson said, that all people are endowed with these rights, not just Americans. I think he knew what he was talking about.
Wow, so it would be immoral for, say, for example, if a Mexican wanted to walk across a bridge or swim across a river in order to get into the United States, it would be an immoral initiation of force to try to hire the government to keep them out. Is that what you think?
Well, not exactly. I mean, you know, we don't ever advocate trespass, that you have a right to trespass onto somebody's property. For example, I told you earlier that we owned a farm there on the Rio Grande, and we didn't believe that any Mexican citizen had the right to just swim the river and step onto our farm. The farm belongs to us. By the same token, we didn't think the Border Patrol had the right to come onto our farm either for the same reason. But in a world of open borders, people travel and move the same way regular human beings do. When you travel by car somewhere here in the United States, you don't go onto people's property to do so. You travel the roads. Same thing with respect to Laredo and Nuevo Laredo. People simply cross a bridge. They walk across. They drive their car across. They take the bus across. They take a taxi. And they take a bus up through the northern part of the United States or an airplane. So what we're just simply saying is make life normal for people traveling around. It's the same like in Europe. You know, for years when we said, let's open the borders, people would say, oh, no, if you did that in Europe, France would disappear and Germany would disappear and you would not be able to distinguish between countries. Well, all of a sudden, the EU countries knocked off all the immigration controls and travel restrictions for the people in the various countries. And lo and behold, the countries are still there. The borders are still there. It simply means that somebody in Italy can travel to France and get a job without asking anybody's permission. That's all we're talking about, just regular, normal human interaction.
Well, you know, I think a lot of the people on the right who are so against immigration like to bring up France and say, see what happens when you have such an open immigration policy. You have the entire Middle East moving to France, and soon enough it's not even going to be Europe anymore.
Well, the important thing to remember is that just because a person travels to a country and lives there doesn't mean that he becomes a citizen of that country. I mean, there's a lot of Americans living in France. They don't give up their American citizenship. There's Americans opening up businesses in France, like Disney World. But that doesn't mean that France all of a sudden is turned into a state of the United States. Same thing with respect to Mexico. There's actually colonies in Mexico of Americans that don't learn the culture, don't learn the language, stick only to themselves, and have their only allegiance to the United States. So what? They're Americans living abroad. It's the same thing here in the United States. We have people from all over the world coming here to visit, to live, to study, whatever. They can bring their food, they can bring their culture, they can bring their books. That doesn't mean that they're going to be changing our Constitution here in the United States.
Jacob, is there anything I'd miss? I'm trying to come up with every devil's advocate argument I can. Obviously, I agree with you in the first place. I love Mexicans. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to extra annoy my audience here. But is there any arguments that I could have brought up to try to throw at you that I might overlook that you can think of?
I can't think of any, but I will say this, though. I think it's important that we focus on how these laws are enforced, because they're brutally, brutally enforced. I grew up around this. I mean, I visited in detention centers, looked in the faces of these people that they're put in jail for the heinous crime of wanting to work. That's their only crime, trying to better their lives. It's a very, very tragic scene. But even worse than that, the U.S. government actually attacks Cuban refugees on the high seas. Now, I can't imagine very many things more immoral than this. These are people that are fleeing communist tyranny. Now remember, this is the government that sacrificed 60,000 of my generation in Southeast Asia, supposedly to fight communism. Now they are attacking refugees from communism and forcibly repatriating them in cooperation with the Castro regime to Cuba.
Sure, and you know, if they're Cuban, they're lucky. If they're Haitian, it doesn't even matter if they make it to shore. They still go back.
That's right. They're absolutely right. But the point is that how can America just stand silently by when they see their government doing this, attacking women and children and trying to do their best to keep them from reaching shore? Because if they step on shore, that means they get to stay. I mean, this is just all too bizarre, but especially cooperating with a communist regime with the intent of forcibly returning refugees to that regime. It almost brings to mind the U.S. government's use of immigration controls to ensure that Jews escaping from Germany did not make it into the United States as well.
It's almost like a bunch of little Operation Keel Hauls, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, Americans don't like to face, a lot of Americans, I don't think, know about that dark part of our history, both of those, Operation Keel Haul, but also just the immigration laws being used to keep German Jews out of the United States.
Mr. Hornberg, I've learned in the last week by reading my email that the only way to protect individualism is to embrace collectivism. And sorry, I'm not saying it makes any sense, but that's what the email says. All right, everybody, it's the Weekend Interview Show. We'll be right back with Jacob Hornberg to talk about the Padilla case. Stay tuned. It's the Weekend Interview Show.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. Before we get to Padilla, real quick there, Mr. Hornberger. We had a caller called in, said that we overlooked something, and I think he must have just tuned in late because we did address this at the beginning. And that was his assertion that illegal immigrants don't pay taxes, and yet they get all this free medical care and free schooling, and we can't afford that. So give you an opportunity to answer that question once again.
Well, actually, they do pay taxes. They pay sales taxes. They indirectly pay property taxes, as all renters do. It's part of the built-in the rental price of renting a piece of property, and they have money withheld from them if they're working for an employer in terms of income tax and Social Security. And a lot of them return to their home countries and never even claim on Social Security when they get into their 60s. So they've essentially provided a free, quote, gift to the American people or to the Social Security Administration.
And, of course, if their immigration was legal, then they would have all the licenses and paperwork, and they'd end up paying federal income tax and everything else, too.
Of course.
It's because it's illegal is the reason they don't.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Okay, sweet. Okay, now, one more thing real quick before Padilla. I'm sorry, but I've been meaning to talk about this on the show lately, but there's always so much other stuff to talk about. But quite often on this show, they play a commercial. I believe it's a John Birch Society commercial about opposing the free trade area of the Americas. You may have just heard it while you were on hold there. And I wonder what's your opinion on the free trade area of the Americas. It was, last I heard, it was supposed to be finally ratified this year. I don't know whether that's still the plan.
Well, the problem with a lot of these so-called free trade agreements, including NAFTA, is that they're really managed trade. Government officials are getting together and treating trade as if it were a privilege rather than a right. These people that are opposing these things, though, are doing it for the wrong reasons. A lot of them do not like free trade. They want government to impose protectionist barriers. Now, I don't know where that advertisement comes out. But at the Future of Freedom Foundation, we combine trade and immigration. In fact, one of our books is called The Case for Free Trade and Open Immigration, because the underlying principles are the same. Why shouldn't people be free to travel and trade and exchange goods and services and visit and so forth? And so what we say is you don't need any of these agreements. If you truly believe in free trade, just unilaterally drop your trade restrictions, which is exactly what we should do. We should simply free the American people. Will other countries follow? I got a feeling they will. But even if they don't, at least half the problem has been solved by virtue of the fact that the American government will no longer be controlling the free economic activities of the American people.
Well, wouldn't a typical, TV economist say that if we just dropped all our tariffs and the rest of the world didn't, that they'd just bankrupt our country in a year or something?
Well, that's what they would say, but it's of course economically fallacious. What bankrupts a country is unrestrained government spending, not the fact that you happen to be buying a lot of Japanese merchandise. Ultimately, if you're spending your money on Toyotas and Fujifilm or whatever, those dollars are going to find themselves back into the United States buying something. I mean, they're not just interested in the paper so they can, put it on their walls. They're interested in the dollar that they're getting from you because they or someone else are interested in buying something from America. So ultimately, the trade will, quote, balance out. What really bankrupts a country is not free trade. It's the unrestrained government spending that's taking place now, that took place in the former Soviet Union, that helped bring the Soviet Union down, and that, as you know, is debasing the dollar right now, causing it to plunge in international markets. That's the real threat.
I like the way you said in your earlier answer about the trade is between people, not between nations. So somehow we've let our governments take this jurisdiction as though it's okay for them to decide who we can trade with. But the fact of the matter is, trade between the U.S. and China really means trade between individuals in the U.S. and individuals in China.
That's right.
Unless, of course, we're talking about, selling missiles to their government.
That's right. And keep in mind what I said earlier, that in every trade, both sides to the exchange benefit. So that means, from their own perspective, otherwise they wouldn't enter into the exchange. So a guy that's got 10 apples and trades with a guy with 10 oranges, giving up one apple for two oranges, both sides benefit, because otherwise they wouldn't enter into the exchange. Now, why that is so critical is because you can have standards of living rising in the nation through the simple act of exchange. No factories, no work, producers and so forth, just people exchanging goods and services. You can see standards of living gradually start soaring because of the act of exchange. Both sides are better in their position, and you multiply that by millions and millions of exchanges. That's how standards of living rise, in addition, of course, to the standard explanation, and that is accumulation of capital.
Well, what if I'm a protectionist teetering on the edge of accepting your argument? Where would you send me to go read?
Well, you get our book, The Case for Free Trade and Open Immigration. I think that's a great start. Our website, we've got a whole section on free trade, and that's at fff.org. And then we've got links to the other free market foundations on our website. I'd go to all their websites, you know, the Ludwig von Mises Institute, Cato Institute, FEE, Reason Foundation. I mean, I think we're leading the way in terms of freedom, and that includes free trade. So that's where I would tell people to go. And if they're interested in books, I don't think there's anyone better than Frederick Bastiat, the famous 19th century free market legislator and economist. His books are fantastic in terms of showing the fallacies of protectionism.
Well, I'm really glad that you brought up about government spending debasing our dollar, and hopefully we can talk about that in the last few minutes of the show after the next break. But for now, we really got to do Padilla. I know you're just dying to tell me about what's happening in the Padilla case.
Well, Padilla is the most ominous threat, in my opinion, to the freedom of the American people in our lifetime.
Well, that's what John Ashcroft said when he announced his arrest in Moscow.
No, he said that Padilla was the most ominous threat.
Oh, I see. It's the Padilla case that's the most ominous threat, isn't it?
It's the doctrine represented by the Padilla case. It's the power that the Pentagon is claiming over the American people. Now, they're only claiming it in one case involving an American because they're trying to keep a low profile, and they don't want to get people too stirred up. But make no mistake about it. If they win this case, you're going to see them doing to Americans what they're doing to Iraqis and what General Pinochet did to Argentinians. You're going to start seeing massive roundups of terrorist suspects in the United States, denied due process of trial, right to counsel, habeas corpus, and trial by jury. That's what they've done to Padilla. They're claiming the right to arrest any American, and of course any foreigner for that matter, but any American, remove him from the federal court system, label him a terrorist, and punish him, even execute him, without due process of law and federal court interference. That is an unbelievable transformation of the American way of life in our criminal justice system.
Now, on February 28th, somehow something resembling an independent judiciary stepped in?
That's right. Now, Padilla's case is wound its way through the courts. He first started out in the Second Circuit, in the New York Circuit. They ruled in his favor, saying this is not what America's all about, you know, and rightfully so. That's what the Soviet Union was all about. And they said, you know, charge him or release him. And his case reached the Supreme Court, and they dismissed it on the grounds that it had not been filed in the right jurisdiction. So Padilla refiles in South Carolina, and Judge Floyd down there said, they rejected all the arguments the Pentagon was making, that they have a right to do this, that they're in war, in the war on terrorism, that they can arrest any American as part of war and do this to him. This federal judge said, absolutely not. Not in the United States, not under our Constitution. And they effectively ordered them, you charge this man with a criminal offense, you charge him with terrorism if that's what you got him on, or you release him within 45 days. And they are fighting that order tooth and nail. Now, they're doing it quietly, but make no mistake about it. They've already announced they're going to appeal it because they are thirsting for this power. They saw what Pinochet was able to do with it, a guy that they supported. They want that power, too, the power to round up citizens, punish them without any federal court interference. So far, the federal courts have denied them that power. We can only hope that they continue to do that. Because as you know, Scott, the Congress is lying supine. They're more of a rubber stamp than Saddam Hussein's legislature was for him. They are not there to protect our freedoms. The Congress is there to protect the Pentagon and the military-industrial complex. Our best hope right now is with that independent judiciary.
Wow. And, you know, I would be... It would be neglectful for me to not bring up the fact that the June 9th, 2004 issue of Newsweek quotes a bunch of FBI agents as saying they don't even have a case on Padilla. The reason they turned him over to the Navy is because John Ashcroft is a liar. There was no dirty bomb. He had no connections. He had no money. He had no explosives. He had no radioactive ingredients. He had nobody to help him. He's innocent. That's why they turned him over to the Navy.
That is the most likely thing that's going on here, because you know they took this guy Hamdi, another American citizen, into custody. That case did reach the Supreme Court. They arrested him on the battlefield in Afghanistan, and the Supreme Court said he's entitled to file a writ of habeas corpus, charge him with something or release him. And do you know that after telling the court that this was one of the most dangerous terrorists, that they couldn't afford to let him go, that he was just horrible and all this, they released him back to Saudi Arabia? I mean, he's now walking the streets. And the probability is because they didn't have the evidence to convict him. And so they just kept holding him and holding him, just like Castro does to his people, just like the Soviet Union did to its people. I should also point out this is not the only pending case here. There's actually a worse exercise, a more raw use of military power that they're doing to a guy named Al-Mari. And I'm posting an article on him on my website, on the Future of Freedom Foundation's website next week. Al-Mari was actually under criminal indictment for terrorist-related crimes, federal indictment over in Illinois. He was getting ready to go to trial. He had lawyers, everything, just like, you know, anybody else that's indicted in the federal court system. They secured a dismissal of the indictment and turned him over to the Pentagon and shipped him immediately to the same naval brig that Padilla was at. Now, the reason that's so ominous is that if they can do it to him, they can do it to any other person that a grand jury indicts. Just remove him from the federal court system, ship him off to a military brig, even Guantanamo. Do whatever they do in Guantanamo, and no federal court would be able to interfere. Now, that case is also in the U.S. District Court in South Carolina. It's pending a ruling, which is expected probably in the next couple of months.
Man, have you ever seen that movie, The Siege, with Denzel Washington and Bruce Willis?
Yeah, but I don't recall. It's been so long.
They're actually playing it on cable this morning, and the part where I guess the president's chief of staff is letting Bruce Willis, the general, know that he's now declaring martial law and putting the military in charge of New York City. There's a portrait of Thomas Jefferson hanging on the wall in the background. And there's a great little speech in there by Denzel Washington where he says, hey, you know, maybe these terrorists, maybe what they're really trying to do is get us to destroy America. Maybe what they want is for us to torture and murder people. Maybe what they want is for us to shred the Constitution, destroy any pretensions of the rule of law, and turn America into something resembling a Middle Eastern tyranny. And in that movie, of course, that's exactly what they do. And in real life, that's exactly what our military has been doing.
Well, and if the terrorists really hate America for its freedom, maybe that's the way they're going to deal with it, just deprive us of our freedom so that they won't hate us anymore.
Hey, that's a pretty good strategy. That sounds like something Bruce Willis could have thought of, too. Yeah, it's funny. I was watching the bloodlust here has just gotten completely out of control. I'm watching, you know, there's this thing yesterday where the guy stole the gun from the bailiff down in Georgia and shot the judge and the court reporter and a bailiff, I think, and ran away. And I'm watching Fox News this morning, and that's all they're talking about. And they have quotes from, you know, the man on the street, from their expert lawyer witness. I was told Neil Bortz, the so-called libertarian, was saying the very same thing on the radio yesterday, which is, I hope the cops just murder him. He doesn't have a right to a trial anymore. He had a right. He had his trial, and he decided he was going to try to kill people and run away. So I hope the cops just execute him when they find him. And this is what the lawyers are saying on Fox News, the special guest experts.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. But, you know, it really goes to show you, Scott, the wisdom and foresight of our founding fathers and our ancestors. When they enacted that Bill of Rights, they knew that there would be people like this throughout history, later generations. If they weren't, they wouldn't have put them in the Bill of Rights. I mean, what the Bill of Rights is saying, we don't care about Fox News, and we don't care about the masses, and we don't care about public school graduates, and we don't care about what you people say. You're going to have to live by these rules. Due process of law, right to counsel, try by jury, and thank goodness for the people that put that in that Bill of Rights, because if they hadn't, I guarantee you none of us would be safe.
Well, what's going to happen if there's one more attack? Or three more, and we go to red alert status.
Well, that's the big danger here, because they know, government officials know, that under emergencies, people get scared, and especially Americans. Americans get frightened very easily.
The home of the brave.
Right. And when they get frightened, they're willing to temporarily, quote, temporarily, let government officials take away their freedom. I mean, people forget that that's how Hitler became a dictator. You know, I wrote an article about that that's on our website, how Hitler became a dictator. That, you know, Hitler was living in a democracy. People forget that. The World War One was the original war to spread democracy. And it produced Adolf Hitler. And that when the terrorists struck at the Reichstag, Hitler used the war on terrorism to persuade the German legislature to grant him temporary powers. And ironically, those powers remained temporary. They were renewed every year or so, but he always dutifully went back to the legislature and got their renewal. And I think that's what we need. That's where history teaches us a lesson, is that just because there's bad things that happen, we cannot let government officials take away our rights and our freedoms. That's why the Bill of Rights was enacted. It doesn't apply just in times of peace and harmony. It's easy to respect rights then. The Bill of Rights applies during emergencies most of all.
If I was somebody in the audience who'd never heard of you before and I wanted to read what you write, where would I go? What would I do?
Well, the best place to go is the Internet, obviously. I mean, we have one of the best freedom websites, I think, on the Internet. And we've got a daily FFF email update that's free for the asking. We consider it the best, or at least one of the best, free market editorial pages on the Internet. People subscribe. Goes out every day. I think they'll love it.
All right, everybody, I'm Scott Horton. It's the Weekend Interview Show. We're talking with Jacob Hornberger from the Future of Freedom Foundation. We'll be right back after this break to talk a little foreign policy. And then about 10 minutes from now, we'll be talking with Scott Kohlhaas about conscription. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. The guest is Jacob Hornberger from the Future of Freedom Foundation. Look him up and read all he writes at fff.org. And quote of the day here. I believe in only one thing, liberty. But I do not believe in liberty enough to ever want to force it upon anyone. That's H.L. Mencken. You could go and read what he writes, too, and or read what he wrote and probably learn a lot. All right, now, Jacob, what the heck is going on with the U.S. dollar? I'm surrounded by people panicking that the American currency is about to completely collapse and our economy will be destroyed and the whole world's going to go to hell. What's the deal?
Well, it's what we've been saying from long before the Iraq War, that government spending was out of control. And that these people that favored this war of aggression and this adventure that involves the killing of, I think, an estimated 100,000 people, was going to cause government spending to soar through the stratosphere. And when you have unrestrained government spending, remember what conservatives used to say. They used to say, we brought down the Soviet Union by making it spend itself into bankruptcy. But what they don't explain is why they're now defending the U.S. government doing the same thing to the American people. That's what's caused the dollar to plunge in international markets for the last year. Now, it's been a gradual plunge, but it's been a plunge nonetheless. What people are saying is because the spending is still so much out of control, the Americans are not funding this debt. It's people in Asia who are saying, Americans are not savers. You know, they've been taught that the solution to prosperity is to spend, spend, spend. We hear that every Christmas, every holiday. Get out and do your patriotic duty and spend money. The Asians know better. They know that the way you get ahead in life is by saving your money, not by spending your money. And they've been spending their money by investing in U.S. government bonds. Well, now about a third of this debt is held by the Asians, if not more. And what the risk is, and what people are saying is, they may feel that since the dollar is starting to drop, they don't want to hold these assets, this government debt anymore, and they may start dropping it in the marketplace. If that happens, you're going to see an accelerated plunge in the dollar, which means all kinds of things are going to happen. Interest rates soaring, skyrocketing, with all those negative effects. And so there's no way to predict what happens if there's a really dramatic plunge in the dollar. But one thing's for sure, this currency is not secure. And the reason for that is not the trade deficit. That's irrelevant. The real reason is unrestrained federal spending. It brought down the Soviet Union. It's brought down empires throughout history. It could bring down this empire as well.
Yeah, but I thought the budget was only $2.5 trillion this year.
Well, the issue is not the issue is how much they're spending versus how much they're bringing in terms of taxation. Now, I'm not suggesting that the deficit be resolved by raising taxes. That's why I was hesitant there. The solution to this is slash government spending. Dismantle the empire. Bring the troops home. Dismantle the socialist program, including Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and so forth, and put this government back on a very, very tight leash. Unfortunately, the American people don't seem ready to do that, and I think we're going to pay some consequences for that.
How come the inflation rate here in the U.S. seems, according to TV, to still be low? Real quick, we're almost out of time.
Because they measure consumer goods. If you look at the wholesale price index and what's happening with commodities, it's significantly higher than what they're reporting. Always look at the commodities. That's what's really going on here, oil and the rest of the commodities.
All right, everybody, you heard it's Jacob Hornberger. He knows everything about everything. You can read all he writes at fff.org. Thanks so much for coming back on the show, Jacob.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks, Scott. Keep up the great work. It's an honor to be on your show.
I sure appreciate that, sir. Talk to you soon. All right, my friends, we'll be right back in about 3 minutes with Scott Kohlhaas, chairman of the Libertarian Party of Alaska and head of draftresistance.org.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals?
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.